We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling.
Welcome to a very special edition of The Corner. We are here at UFC 187. This is Kel Dansby.
This is Andreas Hale.
We are joined by a few guests.
Ryan McKinnell from Yahoo Sports.
Brett Lawson, ESPN Radio, back in action. Nice to be back day two here.
Day two. And Kel, thanks for having us introduce ourselves again. That's like the weirdest thing in radio.
Yo, you have to work on that. We don't do introductions here. You say whatever you want.
I did the first episode, right, back at Insercoid where we did that debut episode. Kel's like, hey, yeah, just intro yourself. I'm like, what do you mean? You want me to, this is the great Ryan McKinnell from Yahoo Sports.
That's what you said.
I am guesting on the corner, and you are lucky to have me.
That's what you got to say.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Okay. You know, if Connor was in your seat, Connor would give us like the most magnificent intro ever. Say,
cutting pro wrestling promos Indeed. On the corner.
So we're here at Media Day. We just wrapped up with
literally
a bunch of
interviews.
Yeah, we're here in the building.
In
the corner, in this dark corner of the media room. And we just got done talking to a whole bunch of fighters. So this is a special edition where we're going to talk about UFC 187 in depth. And where should we start? Should we start with the main event?
Why not? I mean, they were both really humble. We have Anthony Rumble Johnson. DC, Daniel Cormier. Both very humble coming into today. DC had a little bit of trash talk going on. He said, you know, Rumble wasn't as experienced as him, and he really isn't in his class. And
I find that interesting for you to say that.
I think so, too. I mean, Rumble has all the momentum coming into this fight. He's the A side of the card, if there was one, and DC doesn't see it like that. And today just really put that out there. Like, he thinks he's going to win it. He thinks the only man on this planet that could beat him is Jon Jones.
Well, and he might be right. One of the things that I worry about, though, is something you kind of touched on, is the fact that he is coming off such a devastating loss. And the first one of his career, and the way that plays into your psyche. And, for example, I overheard him speaking with a different media member, and he basically said that winning, you know, isn't a big deal.
Yep.
Like, I don't have to win. Like, I don't – so what if I lose? And I get why he's doing that, because of the pressure of the last fight and that it put on him. But it's just like, I mean, this is professional fighting, and it's just a dangerous type of rhetoric to adapt. I get why he's doing it, but you're facing Anthony Johnson, and there's a solid chance you are going to lose, and you shouldn't. It's not okay if you lose. It's never okay if you lose. This is fighting.
Yeah.
I mean, I get why he did it, like I said, but it is a little confusing.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, you have the whole redemption angle, the second chances, whether it be Johnson in a stint or just DC right back at it. Or, you know, we talked a little bit about that yesterday, how he really is next in line. You kind of, by default, had to put him in there. You know, it's a drop-off, but not too much of a drop-off to where it doesn't completely ruin the quality of the fight itself. But it's interesting because he when we were talking to him, he almost sounded – There was elements of regret there. He admitted, aside from the cardio fact, because, you know, we were there all live in attendance, it was easy to see that once he hit that fatigue wall, it was downhill from there. But he said there were
something you can't do against Jon Jones at all.
Absolutely. But there were things there where he said he will not do. You know, I remember talking to him about his most successful tactic against Jon was hands down what he was able to do in the clinch, land a couple shots. He thinks he could do the same on Johnson. And that's really, even though it's different in terms of the way Johnson and Jones fight, Johnson himself even said that he thinks DC's going to come after him. He thinks he's going to be hungry with the second chance. But it's interesting to see that, you know, DC doesn't like what he did against Jones, but what are you going to do against Rumble?
Hey, he's going to like it even less against Rumble, because unlike John, Rumble's got an insane power factor. And that's not to say John doesn't have that. It's just when you're right, you're doing a pros and cons list to fight Anthony Johnson. The number one con is that the guy's got just ridiculous power.
Yeah, you don't want to stand 2 feet from Anthony Johnson and say, hey, you know, eat these super soft uppercuts that I was giving John. Because John had good distance. He had a good jab, and, you know, he was able to get away. John's just not going to try to get away. He's going to say, I'll trade your super soft, pillowy uppercuts for this right hook, and let's see what's going to win out.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, eat one of these and see what you do with it. Because, I mean, like we always said, John's boxing is not that great. He's unpredictable, but he's not wrecking people like Rumble is.
And when he does, it's with elbows and knees and stuff from the clinch, where he's using power as leverage. He's the greatest fighter in my mind that's ever lived in mixed martial arts. That's not something we need to discuss now.
Even
but
on crack.
Right, but
cocaine.
Right, exactly.
Cocaine, come on.
He's the LT of MMA.
Cocaine.
No, for sure. But he just he has power, but it's not that raw power. No. And Anthony brings that raw, unbridled power that can put you to sleep at any angle. And you talked about a redemption story. I don't know about you guys, but Anthony Johnson, similar to Robbie Lawler's story, are both kind of one of those instances where it kind of puts me in check. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this right for 8 years, and you get cynical, you get a little whatever word you want to use. And I don't want to say you think you know it all, but maybe you think you've seen it all, sure. Especially if you're a fan from the 90s. I mean, what haven't we seen? We saw Kimbo draw the biggest amount of viewers ever on free TV. I mean, there's just we have a very weird sport, but to see Robbie do what he did, and more specifically to see Anthony do what he did in regards to putting me in check, I had written them both off, and specifically Johnson. Mm-hmm. When we re-signed him, God. Someone needs to put a bullet in my head. When the UFC re-signed Anthony Johnson, I say we because we're in Vegas and it's a predominant promotion we cover. Right. Please don't start with that payola MMA media garbage. What was I talking about, Andreas? Help me out. Bring
redemption.
Me full circle.
Redemption,
exactly. When we signed him from Titan, when the UFC signed him from Titan, I really questioned it. You know, I had seen him at World Series of Fighting events. He was blown up. He looked like 300 pounds. I didn't know where his dedication was. The names on his resume in Titan weren't that glowing. I didn't know why. Now I know why. You see what he did to Gustafson. Like I said, put me in check. Ryan, slow your roll. You know what I mean? It's not always what it seems. And they made a good decision with this. And now we could, like you said, we might get another one of those options where it's like a crazy year of just redemption. And those are the best stories in MMA.
And the best part is he's done it in dominating fashion. It's
yeah,
not
sure.
Like he's this kind of guy who just, you know, I mean, he's been in the underdog situation, but he's not just hanging around there, you know, sneaking out these wins. He's done it in dominant fashion. And he even said he surprised himself when he tags people. He says, I don't think I'm hitting people that hard.
That's the best kind of power.
Exactly. I'm surprised they're dropping. I'm surprised I'm finishing them.
Yeah.
I never expected myself on my, you know, return stint to the Ultimate Fighting Championship to be right here fighting for the strap. Because regardless,
right.
DC Jones, he earned that shot by dominating Gustafson, and he's surprised himself.
I think those are like the most under-talked about story here are both of their redemptions. Because Cormier's lost at every top level. Like when he gets there, he falls off.
That's
the
a good
Olympics.
Point.
And he's fighting for that final validation. Rumble got cut. He hit Koscheck after the belt. Like,
mm-hmm.
he was done. We wrote him off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were there the night that he hit him. And it was like, nah, he'll never be back. He can't do it. He got choked out by Belfort, and everybody thought he was cooked.
Right.
Now he's back, and these two redemption stories are kind of not getting sold the way that they should, because those are stories that we should be talking about.
Well, and a redemption story even more so from Cormier's is age. How many more chances is Daniel Cormier, specifically, if he were to lose, how many more chances at redemption is Daniel going to get?
Right. Nah, this is the end of the line, right?
Maybe.
Maybe. 36?
Possibly. 7, maybe?
37?
I mean, he's up there.
Yeah,
the good thing is he doesn't have the mileage, but good Lord, I mean, he keeps taking Anthony Johnson and John Jones fights. He's going to get that mileage real quick. He's at the top of the food chain now, and no matter what, who Daniel Cormier fights, it's going to be tough. And like I said, you just got to wonder.
All right, so let's have an official prediction. We got to move briskly through this card because we got some wrestling to talk about, too.
Yep.
Yes, we do.
So I'll start.
Yeah, that's what, first of all, fans listening out there, that's what these media days turn into. We do our work, and then we sit in the corner and talk about NXT and WWE. And
that's how we roll. That's
New
how this
Japan.
Podcast came about.
Head of PR for the UFC, Dave Schaller, who broke up the Cormier-Jones brawl. You guys may know him. Numerous times it stopped us. I'm like, are you guys just, like, seriously, you going to start working, or are you just going to keep talking about pro wrestling and hip-hop?
Yeah, that's what
we
do.
Sorry.
Right, so I'm going to start it. So I
you pay us to talk about MMA or anything.
I've been going back and forth, but I'm taking Rumble. I think he may stop him. I don't know if Cormier has ever felt anything like this. And I think that Cormier, once he gets hit, he's going to try to take this fight to the ground. And people forget Rumble has good wrestling. And at his size, it's going to be really interesting to see if Cormier, if he's shooting for a double A, he might get caught. If he gets in the clinch, Rumble might be strong enough to push him off. 3-4 rounds of this, I don't know if Cormier is going to last. I'm going to say Rumble by fourth round stoppage.
I'm not against that. Stoppage, I don't know about just because Daniel's never been stopped.
I know.
And on the surface, he just seems like the toughest dude, one of the toughest dudes in the division. That said, you're right. He hasn't fought anyone like Anthony. That's the cool thing about Anthony Johnson. It's one of those we don't know where his ceiling is. We've seen glimpses of it, but what if Anthony Johnson's John Jones? Yeah, maybe he has like 6 losses, but he was fighting at welterweight and he was young, and I mean, he took a little bit. I mean, the natural raw athletic prowess that Anthony Johnson is capable of is terrifying. You talked about size. I think that's going to be the name of the game. I'm constantly going to wonder about Cormier and his size. He is not that big. He's not that much taller than I am. He's undersized for this division. I think he'd be great at 185. He wrestled at, what did he wrestle, 190, yeah. something like yeah. that. I know he was younger. It was probably easier for him to do. But, yeah, point being, every time he fights size, at least when he faces off against the Anthony Johnsons of the world and that long, rangy, that guy who can pop a jab, and now he's bringing power unlike Jones. Yeah, I see Anthony winning. I don't know about a stoppage, Andreas.
Tough one.
But you know what? It's like that might be the only way he could win. Because if it goes later, one would presume like in 3, 4, and 5, he might tire out with Daniel grinding on him. The good thing is it's a real debate, but I'm going to go Johnson as well because he just – and it's something Brett talked about earlier is the surge he's on. That's a big factor.
Man, up until like this second, I didn't know who I was going to pick. Like, and I still not –
best kind of picks.
Yeah, I'm not
– I got to admit, like, I was in the same boat.
I'm not like super confident about this one. I'm going to be second-guessing my pick in the next 30 seconds. Yeah, and I'm going with DC. I mean, DC size, you say what it is, but he hasn't lost any height since he was fighting heavyweights. And all of these wins came against bigger people. They came against people with power.
Bigger and slower, I mean, though. That's the slow factor with heavyweight plays
slow.
In. Yeah.
They were slow, but I've seen him fight some pure monsters in there. Yep. I mean, he didn't get knocked out by a Roy Nelson who was taking people's face off.
You don't ragdoll Barnett like he did.
Listen, the guy has done amazing things prior to that John Jones fight, and I think he's on a mission. And having Kane back, that's what sold me. Him and Kane are training for the first time in 2 years for the same camp. They were training against each other every day. Kane has the best cardio possible. So the cardio concerns that I saw against John Jones, to me, are gone. Because in rounds 4 and 5, he's been training with Kane every day for rounds 4 and 5.
Mm-hmm. But he's not Kane, though.
Right.
But Anthony Johnson's not Kane. You say what you want about his wrestling.
Well, no, Daniel's not Kane. Meaning, the symbiote.
He doesn't have to fight Kane. Thank God. That's why he moved down. He has to fight people who are lighter and less skilled at wrestling and have less cardio than the man he's faced every day for the past 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. It's weird to say, but Anthony Johnson isn't Cain Velasquez. So I think Daniel has been training against someone who is way tougher now than he had. Anyone prior to the John Jones fight. I think we're going to see the best DC. I think it's going to go 5. I'll have Rumble winning probably rounds 1 and 3. DC taking 2, 4, and 5.
There you go.
All right, here we go. The verdict. I don't think this is smoke and mirrors. I think Rumble's the real deal. I'm picking Anthony Johnson. There's this, I don't know whether it be the momentum. He's white hot. There's just something about his striking, the stone in his hands. You know, knockout artist is something we often throw around a lot once a guy gets a few, you know, tags a guy a couple of times. But there's just something about Rumble. And people overlook his wrestling. Are his wrestling credentials
exactly
Cormier's? Absolutely not. No one in the UFCs really have the same credentials on paper that Daniel Cormier has. So if this goes to the mat, I don't think it's going to be that mismatch. And you know, we saw Cormier's wrestling. Granted, it was against John Jones, who has the best takedown defense, as good as anyone we've seen. You know, we mentioned how MMA wrestling is so much different than amateur wrestling. And, you know, Daniel Cormier, as good as he was, he's not wrestling at Oklahoma State. He's not wrestling, you know, in the Olympic trials or anything like that. He's in an octagon, and he's going against a guy who has the reach, the size, and he's not the lanky reach. He's a brick. He's a big dude, and he's a tank.
He is a big dude.
And even though I think they're going to go back and forth, you know, DC thinks if he gets him in the clinch, he could have the same kind of effect he had against John at 182. Rumble thinks that he's going to come after him, and that's probably what Rumble wants. I think they're definitely – it's going to be a war. I think this one will go to the mat a couple of times. Actually, I don't think they're just going to go toe-to-toe in the center on their feet, but I like Rumble. I just think there's too many things going for him, and I think this isn't just like a little return streak. Like I said, I mean, we talked about on my radio show. I said I think he's going to have the biggest 2015 out of anyone, and that's what I'm saying. It's not smoke and mirrors. I really think Anthony Johnson is primed for the next big thing in the light heavyweight for now.
Decision or stoppage?
I'm going to go decision.
Okay.
I think he tags him a couple of times, definitely, and it's dangerously close. I don't know, though. It's hard to see DC really getting stonewalled.
Dog, I know. It's just watching Rumble hit people and how he changes people's life. Like what we talked about, Gennady Golovkin, he hits you and everything hurts. Rumble's got that type of power.
It's like you were tough until you got hit.
Yeah. He didn't stop by Phil. That was my logic behind it. He didn't stop Phil.
Phil, I mean, the thing is Phil's a little bit better with his footwork, so he could get away. I don't know if Cormier can get away if Rumble hits him, and that reach is a big advantage that Rumble has too.
Daniel was faster than everyone pretty much at heavyweight.
Yeah.
Now he's slower than everyone at light heavyweight, and there's just a big gap in that. That two, you know, the 205 and the everything above.
Not yet.
And so I think that's partly why he looks so impressive at heavyweight. And we're going to find out a lot more about Daniel Cormier's career, specifically at light heavyweight, because if he were to lose to Anthony, I don't want to say what's the point, but if he were to lose like the way he lost to John, okay, what's the point?
Yeah.
You can't beat Anthony and you can't beat John.
So why
are
you
here? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like,
and he is able to jump divisions. So, and he was very successful at heavyweight. So it's
goes back up.
Yeah, there's a, maybe, you know,
it's
possible. Well, I don't know if he'd ever. I don't know if he'd ever fight Kane. I don't know. I don't know how this plays out. It's really, he's in a really weird spot. He really is. He needs to win.
Talking about someone who needs a win, Chris Weidman's coming back, defending the belt. It's the co-main. It could headline many of other cards. And it probably should have, but, you know, you can't really depend on Chris nowadays, so he's going to be a co-main guy.
Or Vitor, for that matter.
Yeah, for the next couple of years.
This fight has been made and rescheduled more times, and, I mean, I still don't know if it's going to happen. We're 48 hours away.
Pretty sure we were all at a different age when this fight was originally scheduled.
Many different ages.
Yeah, so.
I wasn't able to rent a car, no. I'm just kidding.
So we have that. Let's get predictions on that. Want to go back around this way? You go first.
Yeah. All right, well. I like Weidman. I like Weidman's stoppage. I really do. And I actually think they go to the mat. I think he could tap Belfort.
We just talked about that. He has to put that jitsu on.
Well, we were talking about it when we were at his, you know, at the stage when he was there. A lot of people, he was already a brown belt. He just got his black belt recently. And I think people don't realize how good he is on the mat.
Nobody
we already
does,
know his wrestling credentials.
Right.
He's a tank. That, I mean, we've talked in detail, Kel, just about his size, just how he just breaks people. He's not afraid to go toe-to-toe. And, you know, I think Weidman still has a chip on his shoulder because I talked to him about this. I feel success for him has, quite frankly, been a double-edged sword because I think even though, you know, greatest of all time, Silva, I mean, that's up for debate, but it's still Anderson Silva, right. Beats him twice. The circumstances were definitely interesting on, you know, in each fight itself.
Well, the chip on his shoulder.
But it's almost been a double-edged sword because he can never escape that. People don't ever – they still talk about the two Silva fights despite his excellent performance against Machida. You know, he's the kind of guy who I feel just elevates his game.
I don't know if he ever gets the respect for that. Like,
he won't
either. That's the thing.
I don't think so. I mean
– it's written, right?
Yeah, it's
– they were flukes.
Both of
them. They were flukes.
That's what they're going
to
say.
He'll have to win like 10 fights in a row.
He still doesn't get the credit. Like,
right.
He has the respect, I feel, but he doesn't have the praise almost.
He's going to need to beat Rockhold, Jacare, Romero, Machida again. He's going to have to beat everyone to get credit.
Rockhold right in his backyard too. It's like now people are talking about that.
Stay healthy. That's my only thing.
Right.
Stay healthy. Yeah. You want to be the best at whatever. Stay healthy. Show me that you can fight. Show me that you're able to fight two or three times a year and you don't get every fight canceled.
Right.
That's my only knock against him. And when do the injuries catch up to him? Because sooner or later, you can only break so many bones. You can only, you know, tear so many things before it affects you inside the cage. And all these other guys have been healthy and someone's going to take your face off. You're going to be a step slower.
So
is
Belfort taking his face
Belfort's
off?
Belfort's not that guy. Even though the TRT results today are quite interesting. The testosterone. But, listen, I don't know how it goes.
I didn't know if I missed the news cycle.
No.
I'm like, there's elevated testosterone? I was like, what's going on?
No, it was high, I guess. They told Chris. What? Yeah, when we were at Chris's media day and we were in front of Chris, someone came over and told him the results from the past test. Both fighters passed the test. But today, the testosterone results show 1,200 for Vitor and 500 for Chris. And Chris was very concerned. And he was like, is this allowed? He was like, so you're telling me this is legal? And they said, yes, his T levels are low enough and it passed the limit.
Okay.
But his testosterone is through the roof.
Yeah, I mean, he's a lifetime, I mean, by all accounts, lifetime steroid user or performance enhancing.
So I mean, 1,200 to 500.
It might be the levels might be. I don't know how that works. I'm not a
Chris
doctor.
Was very concerned.
No, he says he should
like
be.
The shock on his face. He was like, "Wait, he was clean and he did this." He was like, "How is that possible?"
Look what Vitor does when he's on TRT. I mean,
he's a different fighter.
That was the beast, and here's the issue. And I'm glad. Do you want to make a prediction? Before
Let me get that. No, it's still Chris. I still have Chris winning it.
Yeah.
I have Chris stopping him. I'll give it third round.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
I think a mid third.
He breaks him.
Yeah. He breaks. And I think it's ground and pound. I think it's ugly.
I'm in the same boat. I think Weidman goes hard on him, puts it on him, makes up for lost time in the cage, and keeps building on that chip on his shoulder. My real issue with this whole fight, and it has been since the announcement that it was going to be Belfort fighting for the title. First of all, you're dealing with one of the most stacked divisions in the company. So when you're ushering in this new era of PED, penalty, PED, wrangling, kind of getting the sport clean, the Nevada Athletic Commission dropping the hammer, the California Athletic Commission dropping the hammer, everyone seems to be dropping the hammer. And then you have the UFC giving the PED abuser coming off a recent steroid suspension an immediate title shot. It just drives me nuts.
It's such a double standard.
It is. My issue with it is it's transparent. It's viewed as exactly what it is, and that's a cash grab. They don't believe that the other guys are ready to push the pay-per-view. They don't think that they've got the drawing power and that Vitor was the better choice. But if you were serious about, you know, putting a stamp on PEDs, we would be doing something about this and not rewarding multiple-time offenders with a title shot when the division is loaded and it doesn't need to happen. And it's really unfortunate. I don't have anything against Vitor, but listen, man, this is a fistfight in business, and people can die in there. And we don't need any more things helping people die potentially. And it's the one sport you don't want PEDs. And it's just this fight comes at a really weird time. So yes, I think Weidman's going to win. And I think Weidman, he could have taken vials. He could have taken that movie where he jabs all the Tony Jaa. The Thai fighter, they have that scene in that first one, Ong Bak, where the villain takes all those steroids and drabs them in his chest at the last battle scene, and he's got like roids popping out of his. Anyway, Vitor could do that. Yeah, right.
See,
it took me like 25 seconds to get there.
Yeah, you made it.
It got there. We brought it full circle. But Vitor could have done that, and Weidman, I still think, would have handled him. So.
Yeah, I'm not going to mince too many words. I looked at Weidman today. We were over there looking at him. He looks crazy relaxed. He had his nice socks on and his slacks and his jacket. Like, he was cleaned up. Like, he
looks like Superman.
But he looks like he belongs here now. The thing about Weidman is he never looked like he belonged. He looked like he was still like, I'm trying to figure out my way. Is Anderson Silva thing? He looks sure of himself, and he's got shit to prove to everybody else.
Oh, if you look at his body language, it looks like not only am I, you know, the best in my division, I look around all these other guys in the room, I'm better than all them too.
I'm going to go with Weidman's stoppage also. I think he takes him a little bit deeper. I think he goes fourth. I think he's going to brutalize him, and hopefully we get to see that jiu-jitsu game put to work. Because I don't think that Weidman's going to want to stand there and trade with Vitor too much.
No.
And he's going to want to take him down. He's going to want to show off that jiu-jitsu and prove that he's just a bad motherfucker.
I thought the same thing about Machida, and look how that turned out.
True, indeed. Machida's just a different kind of.
Yeah, but I mean, standing up against
and
him.
Machida almost won that fight. Yeah, I mean, hopefully he learned something from that.
Yeah.
Machida's accurate, not necessarily powerful. Vitor's both. Precision. You know, all that TRT stuff, I said fine. All that steroid stuff, I said fine. It doesn't take away from the fact that his technique and his power is still very much God-given in a lot of ways.
Yo, Brazil's going to hate Chris Weidman after this. Yeah. That's three Brazilians in a row that Weidman's
taking him right out.
The big dogs, too. Talking about Anderson, Vitor, and Machida.
Doesn't get much bigger than that
country. Especially generational.
Yeah.
90s,
all,
mid, and up.
And
yeah.
All consecutive. And really for a guy, unless you knew about him, it was wrestling credentials or what he was able to do earlier, almost came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go to the next. We got to breeze through this.
How about we all just pick the next best fight and give our prediction?
Okay, well, that should be easy.
Yeah, just your personal best fight and give your prediction. Well, the one that you're looking forward to, undercard, anything under that.
I said it before. I'm looking forward to Dodson and Zach Makovsky.
I'm glad you took that one.
I'm really looking at I've always liked Dodson since the Ultimate Fighter days. I just thought the dude's a little spark plug. He's the shot of adrenaline and charisma that the division needs right now. Mm-hmm. And Makovsky's a guy who's had gold around his waist before in Bellator. So I think Dodson wins that fight by knockout, but I think he makes it fun, and I think it's impressive, and I think he gets some kind of bonus with his performance.
All right. I'm not just saying this because I got a Q&A with him in UFC Magazine this month. Shameless plug. Go read it. No, but Donald Cowboy Cerrone, man. Anytime the dude fights, I think he's the star of the show. I think he's one of the biggest assets in the company right now. I think he's got a wave of momentum that I don't know how many people have seen within recent years. He seems to have all these fans behind him, and he is being paired, guys. You know, if you're not familiar with John McDessie, I know we're all bummed that Khabib Nurmagomedov got the axe and got removed from the card. John McDessie's a Taekwondo karate guy with been a highlight reel ever since he stepped on the scene, and from his last performance, it looks like he's only getting better. Wouldn't call it a trap fight for Cerrone because I don't believe that exists with him. I think he fights every fight with all of his heart, and he does what he does, but I fully expect this fight to be an easy candidate for fight of the night, and it's not going past the first round, and that's why I'm excited for it. It's just not.
It's a difficult fight, man. It is because Cerrone can honestly get caught with one. And
he could.
He's not getting knocked out though. He's never been knocked out. He's probably got the hardest chin in the sport.
No. But he can go
but
down.
Boy, yeah. That's what I'm saying. McDessie and him could do him and Alvarez all over again.
To me, it's scary because in MMA, you don't have to get knocked out. That's what always scares me. You can just somehow get pummeled and the ref stop it too early, or you know he just thinks you're not defending yourself and calls the fight, which isn't the case a lot of times, especially with someone like Cowboy.
Sure.
So that's what always worries me. I'll pick a different one than all you guys. I'll take Uriah Hall versus Natal. I like Hall. I think he's primed for a really big push this year. I think it was on your show, Brett, where I said he's going to have the biggest 2015 out of anyone. All these redemption stories, he seems like he's on track for that. Well, in my mind, he's like the next guy to have that next redemption story. And he has to prove it tonight, though. And I think the last time we've seen him fight a couple of times since, you know, that last loss, and he's turned it around. He fought with the weird toe thing.
Yeah.
That one fight.
The weird toe thing. That was a grotesquely broken toe.
Yeah, and he showed a lot in that.
He did. The crowd was behind him and everything.
Yeah.
He just has to show that he's a professional. His head is on right.
The head.
And he has a killer instinct. Because as a person, he doesn't have it. Like, I've talked to him many times, interviewed him many times. He doesn't want to hurt people. Like, he doesn't have that finishing quality. If you're a little bit of his friend, you have an inch of friendship, he's not going to fight you with all his heart. And that's his problem. He has to remove that. He has to know this is a sport. This is his livelihood. He has to go in there to take everyone's head off because he is capable of it.
Yeah.
So I want to see him do that. And it's on the undercard, and I'll be there. I'll be out there early.
Yeah.
Usually I don't go out there early. I want to see it from, you know, cage side. And I want to see him, you know, spinning back kick someone when it means something and make a highlight reel out of somebody.
Well, that's the thing. We saw what he was capable early on, and I think we can all agree it was one of those cases of too much too soon.
Yeah, exactly.
It just, the pressure was a little too much for him, and Dana and company pushed him hard, put him on a big stage, and wanted to keep rolling, be the next Anderson Silva.
Like, when you look at Hall, he screams potential. I think you get that killer instinct, you know, almost that thirst for blood. He could be great. I'm big on him. I'm big on Cowboy.
But before you go past that, though, like with Hall, it's crazy. When I talked to him last time, I was like, you fought Chris Weidman before.
Yep.
I was like, you guys went toe-to-toe, and you were the guy. Chris Weidman was supposed to lose to you. You were the next big thing. And you see this guy hold the belt, beat the best fighter in the world at the time, and you've seen what he's gone on to do, and your potential was higher than his. I was like, how does that make you feel? And to him, it was weird just seeing like him go blank-faced, and he was like,
might have never thought of that way.
Yeah, he was just like, you know what? That's true. I'm going to be better than him. And I was like, you got to prove it. But it's crazy to see someone on the same path that they fight so early in their career, and then it just goes two different ways.
Yo, he was Harold Miner.
Right.
He's got a highlight, and he hasn't capitalized off it.
Baby Jordan.
He can't be Harold Miner any longer. He's got to capitalize.
Right. So, they called him Baby Silva, basically, right? Yep. Dana or Chael, both of them kind of questioned, like, he could be it, and it was just like, uh-oh.
Yeah. I mean,
great comparison. Yeah, sorry. Harold Miner. I love that. Baby Jordan.
And I know, like what Ryan said, I love Cowboy, you know, talking to him. You know, he probably wouldn't tell you, but I think he knows in the back of his head. He's kind of become the face of that division right now. His fan base has just exploded.
He's by far outside of Pettis the biggest name in that division. He might be bigger.
Exactly.
I mean, take away the Wheaties box. They love him. Here's the thing. I've never really heard for every 90 positive comments you see on Cerrone, there's maybe 10 negative.
Yeah.
And that's amazing because this is MMA.
Yeah.
Very, very rarely do we get unanimous love for anyone.
It doesn't matter. It could be press, fans, fellow fighters, they all love him. For me,
it's because he's genuine.
Yeah, and he is what you see is what you get with them.
Who else stops along the roadways of America,
right,
in their RV to greet their fans and have a beer with them?
Exactly.
It's partly to where our sport is, but partly to who he is as an individual.
And even social media, you know, some people don't look big in that, but that goes a long way in the eyes of the fans.
That's a great point. He's built largely this positive wave of momentum solely on social media.
I mean,
yes, his performances speak volumes, but
yeah.
That dude, if any of you know him, I mean, he is relentless with that.
And in today's day and age, when so many people are jumping off the boxing bandwagon and, you know, so many people want the violence that the combat sport is supposed to represent, I think people like the fact you have a guy who will wrestle a rabid grizzly bear. You know what I mean? I or a fight a rabid grizzly bear. They like that. In terms of the fight, though.
That was confusing because Khabib has actually wrestled a bear. Yeah. So I was like, are we talking about Khabib or Cerrone? I knew you were talking about Cerrone because he's a cowboy and he lives out west. I got it, but it was just so happened since
Khabib's awesome.
And he wrestles bears, legitimately.
Who saw him wrestle this bear? I've always wondered.
What do you mean? It's a video of it, man.
It's a video of him wrestling the bear?
Yeah. It's not a giant bear. It's a little baby bear. It's still a bear.
A bear is a bear.
Thank you.
A bear is not a bear.
Words of wisdom from Andre.
A cowboy and a bear is a bear, goddammit.
A bear is not a bear. That is a cub.
All right, before I
cub will still maul your face off.
In terms of the fight, it's actually after what we saw today. I'm interested to see what happens with Brandon Arlovski. Just because I like Travis Brown a lot.
Pull up some lawn chairs, some Doritos, stream.
Crack a beer together, you know. And you got to wonder, what does the friendship do? You know, Arlovski was one of the top heavyweights kind of in the era before this
redemption
era.
Story.
Yep, there you go. And Travis Brown is poised. He thinks a victory here can thrust him into heavyweight contention. You know, there's a lot of upside to him, and you got to wonder after their little selfies and they're hugging on the stage with
lots
the, with
of
the
love
face
today,
off.
Right? Everybody
lots
of hugged.
Love. You got to wonder. Okay, thugs need come. Hugs. Okay, that's fine. But come Saturday, once that octagon door closes, you want to get thrust in that title shot. You have a guy who already has, you know, made his bones. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
What are you picking?
In the fight, I like Brown.
Go with Brown.
I like Brown.
All right, so look, we don't have a whole lot of time. We need to roll into.
Oh, it's wrestling time.
I'm rolling right. Look, I'm just going to say this. Samoa Goddamn Joe is in NXT.
Joe's going to kill you.
Listen,
when that chant started, though, I was like, it's real.
Yeah, I do want to say one thing, though. That NXT crowd is out of their damn mind. That whole pay-per-view or whatever you want to call it, they were chanting, so-and-so's going to kill you. Finn's going to kill you. You know Samoa Joe's coming out later. You know that's his chant. Why are you wasting it on everyone else when you know Joe's coming?
Smarks. The eternal smarks of internal
they
smarks
were,
of
they
NXT.
were too smart for their own good on that one because Samoa Joe's behind that curtain. You need to make that chant. That is his chant, damn it. Anyway.
I lost my shit last night. 2 a.m, because look, first
of all.
It was
Mark Fest. We got a Finn Balor.
from Finn Balor's entrance to the end of the show. That
main event, Sami Zayn.
Steam Generico chapter. With
NXT did it again. They did it again. And more importantly.
Continue to do it.
First of all, Owens destroyed Zayn again. I didn't think we were going to get a similar booking of Sami Zayn getting squashed to bring Joe out. I didn't see that coming. I thought it was going to be competitive. I thought maybe John Cena was going to come out and ruin it for Owens or something like that. I didn't see Owens just destroying Zayn. And then
it was competitive for a minute, though. They booked it a little different.
Yeah, Sammy,
but that was because of his injury, right?
Early, but another TKO. We were in the midst of another stop.
Right.
It's crazy.
Well, it was a great angle, too, because it builds Joe. For those who don't know him, you know, he's aligned with one of their bigger stars, a guy who was beloved. And it was just nice to see ROH, you know, kind of take hold again. I mean, we kind of talked about this before the show, kind of a bridging of a gap between eras. I don't think there was anything between the Attitude Era. I just think there was a little bit of a lull, a little bit of a passage of time to where there needed to be a bridging of gap of eras. And I think we saw that with CM Punk. A lot of people are saying, we don't need CM Punk. Or, God, CM Punk, please come back and have matches with these guys. Man, he already did that.
He did.
And I said this on social media.
Five-star matches.
CM Punk, exactly. Yep. Iron Man matches. Yep. CM Punk doesn't need pro wrestling, and pro wrestling doesn't need CM Punk. He did his job. He bridged the gap from the Attitude Era to the era he ushered in, which is the ROH era. He came over in 2006, showed the WWE that smaller independent wrestlers, there was a resurgence. This is our generation. These are 30-year-olds that grew up watching Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, Rick Rude, all these Million Dollar Man, all these great characters, all these great technicians, Dynamite Kid, Davey Boy Smith, Bret Hart, Owen Hart, that whole they grew up on this, and now they're getting their time to shine, and you're seeing the talent. Punk ushered it in, but he brought with him Daniel Bryan a couple years later. You bring in Cesaro, you bring in Ambrose, you bring in Rollins, Tyler Black, who was the champion in ROH. This is an ROH lineage. It's almost like royalty. There was a point in time at ROH, and they still have so much talent, but a real window there that there was just flooded, and now we're all seeing it come to the WWE, and it's a beautiful thing.
And you know what the beauty is? They're not mid-carders. I mean, their upper exactly. mid-card main event scene. It's a lot different when you have a guy and you just thrust him under everything else.
Right.
Because we've had plenty of great indie workers, great international workers.
This seems more calculated, which was my worry when they were signing them all up. Okay, fine, you signed them. What are you going to do with them?
Absolutely.
Well, we're going to bring out Sami Zayn with a Bret Hart intro in Montreal, and then we're going to have John Cena come out and cut this crazy promo, and Owens is going to come out and say, I don't need your approval. I've been here 15 years, and I'm better than you. That is how you debut these talents, and they're doing it in a way where I didn't know if they were going to, and I got to give credit to Triple
H. I think the Summer of Punk definitely helped usher that in.
Punk in general,
He got white hot.
Yes.
Daniel Bryan got white hot. You see Ambrose and Rollins now.
Yep.
It's just there's something
That's what I refer to in Bridging the Gap. Punk made it cool again for all of us 20-something and 30-somethings to come back and see the pro wrestling we grew up on, or a new inclination of that, a new version of that. And like I said, he did his job. He made the introduction. We got the handshake. If it wasn't for CM Punk, I came back to wrestling in late 2010. Yep. Right when The Miz basically took the belt on Monday Night Raw. And I was like, that's weird. A real world guy now has the belt. It was all. I started watching.
That was a real shitty time.
It was. But you know who brought me back?
Awful early 2011 was.
Oh, well, yeah, for sure. But what brought me back was the fact is what they were kind of like focused on the gimmicks. Like I saw ARD. I saw lightweight champion of the world, Rafael Dos Anjos. Just walking
through. What's up, fellas? Yep. And he's moving on.
Just hanging out.
And he's out. Yeah. I wonder if we wanted to talk about Sami Zayn in NXT. but no, he did it. He did the job. He ushered that in. And the thing that brought me back during that time was like a guy like Alberto Del Rio. So through that, if it weren't for specifically Punk, but Del Rio in general, bringing me back to pro wrestling, I would have never been really introduced to ROH. I never really would have been introduced to the Steens and Genericos. I had the Tyler Blacks, the Cesaros. I wouldn't have known of these guys as Chris Heroes, and I wouldn't have seen this great resurgence of the indie scene, which we are seeing from Dragon Gate to Chikara to Ring of Honor to, I mean, the Hollywood. There are so many top, even here in Vegas, FSW is putting on good shows. I want to give a little credit to them. I mean, there seems to be, because of these 30-somethings in our generation, all these kids that wanted to grow up to be pro wrestlers, and they're so badass, and there's just not enough room for them. But thank God the best of the best are now getting their shot, because how long have we said Generico, Steen, these guys, Devitt, they're the best.
But you know, there's just a whole nother wave coming, and that's what's crazy, because the PWGs, the ROH, all these, they're just going to re-up.
Yep.
Yeah. They're going to go to these smaller promotions and find some guys the next guy.
And some guys won't want to come over. So they're going to like the Young Bucks.
Exactly. They're going to be lifers.
And they're going to be huge as lifers on the indie scene. They're going to make six figures. They're going to establish a legacy. It's a beautiful thing.
But like my man David D said from Wrestler, I told him I was going to credit him with this when he said it.
I love this. I already know what he's going to say, but I love it.
NXT is Raucous Records with Interscope money. Now, anybody who listens to hip-hop when Raucous Records and Talib Kweli and Mos Def.
Soundbombing 2.
Yeah, the Soundbombing 2 album when Eminem was on it. And you get that at a distribution deal, and this is what NXT has become. You get all these indie wrestlers.
It's the greatest comparison because it's so true.
Yeah, David D, man, look, I'm going to high-five you from long distance. I know you're doing your thing over there at Bossa, but damn, man, that was a hell of a comparison. But that's what NXT is right now, and it's exciting to watch. Because these guys, like you said, they're not mid-carders.
No.
Like, you look at Kevin Owens right now, and you look at the promo he cut on Raw,
they're the best in-ring.
And that's kind of what worried me, because, you know, you have this great product in NXT. If you don't utilize it, it really doesn't matter. And for a while, it was almost looking like that.
Yeah.
You know, Zayn was there for a while. You know, Neville was there forever, but now they're incorporating him into television, which...
Well, I don't mean to cut you off, but I think in a large degree, and we were talking about this before the show, the genius of John Cena's U.S. Open Challenge.
It's allowed it all to happen.
It's genius.
And, it's the best thing on TV.
And then go off on that. When is the last time, because we've seen good Mania fallouts and we've seen great SummerSlam buildups, when is the last time we have seen a May to June period, which they often don't try very hard on, this good?
This is the best since the Summer of Punk, and they dropped the ball with Kevin Nash and that whole clusterfuck so bad. You could have run 2 weeks. And that's my issue. And that's where I was hesitant with all this NXT stuff. It's like, dude, this is the same guy who ruined the Summer of Punk because he wanted to interject himself and make a tag team out of it.
Summer of Brian, too.
Yeah, he did. He did. I mean, he helped build. I think he intentionally ruined that because that was to build the story for the Authority. Yeah. But the Punk stuff, that was the stuff I didn't watch for 10 years. From 1999 to 2010, I'd turn on my TV and it was John Cena and Triple H. And Triple H has a high knee. the pedigree. He's got like seven moves. Yeah, I've watched the
same. That's generous.
And that's no disrespect to him and his work as in 90s when he was the Blue Blood, who was he was a much better wrestler. But he just kept constantly interjecting himself and giving himself the top spot. It drove me crazy. But now it seems that he's cutting that back. It's great because Vince is on his way out. He's aging. All credit. Pioneer legend, and Triple H is not being able to work as much anymore, which takes the ego away from him. He can see it through clear eyes. He doesn't need to interject himself with Finn Balor.
He loves the NXT guys,
of course, because he's getting the ego's getting stripped. He doesn't need to be the top dog
and
now.
He's also in touch.
Exactly.
Unlike
Vince. Exactly.
It's a different level. Ego is still there to me with Triple H.
It's just not an in-ring ego, exactly. Which is what ruined it for me.
He's now chasing someone else. Back then, he was
chasing
the great.
He was chasing
The Rock. He was chasing all these guys. He wanted to be them. The ego comes involved.
I'm sure
now
at some
he's chasing
level,
Vince on the ego aspect.
And I think he's
and
chasing
he has to beat that.
And I think he's chasing Stephanie. Because I think the thing that will always follow his career until the day he dies is that he's Stephanie McMahon's husband. And that he to some degree kind of weaseled his way into that role. Yeah, but through what he is giving back to us, I mean, the story of Triple H is just being written. I mean, I don't think he's particularly an intelligent guy. I'm talking like just like base level if you gave him an IQ test. But I think his business acumen and I think his understanding of pro wrestling, I mean, he's a killer Kowalski product. I mean, the guy really gets it, but he's also in tune with this generation. He's not a dummy.
You know what's
going to
be crazy?
He doesn't ignore the crowds like Vince does. When he hears someone pop for Finn Balor, like he's okay, this guy's hot, and it's obvious.
What's going to be crazy is that in 10 years – there might be a generation of kids, and at that point, 20-year-olds, 25-year-olds, that won't remember Triple H the wrestler.
Right.
They will know him as the guy.
Just like Dwayne Johnson.
Who built the WWE into what it is. And with all these young guys, and he's going to just be authority Triple H, and he's going to be on the mic. He's going to be Vince, and they're going to forget that he was an amazing wrestler.
So we talk about all this Triple H giving. Can we take something back? Can Seth Rollins give back the pedigree? Because I hate watching Rollins do the pedigree.
I hate the finisher to begin with. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of it.
The four-way match was great until he did the pedigree, and I was like, ah.
It was such a whack pedigree.
I think he probably felt it. The pressure.
Yeah, it was like, ooh, pedigree. Yeah. Can't pull it off.
But you know what's interesting?
That curb stomp. Why take that?
Yeah, away? that was unbelievable.
That's got to be his face move, right? They were just pulling that back to when he goes face.
No, they don't even show it in the highlights anymore. If you watch recaps, you don't of any
so
Rollins.
It's
stuff,
a concussion
it's
thing.
Yep, it's out of there. Well, no more curb stomp.
Are you sure it's just not? They're not doing that for when he goes face to give him that move.
If he goes face to give him the Phoenix Splash.
Really? Yeah,
that's probably what they'll do. Because once he goes face, they're going to give him. And that's why it was so interesting when he was the one to turn heel. He's the high flyer. He's the smaller guy. Yep. A lot of people were surprised he was the one to turn.
Right.
Because his moveset isn't very heel-oriented.
That's true. Exactly.
So that's why as a face, that would be a great
move.
Okay,
fair enough.
There, but that curb stomp was a motherfucker. Like, I loved watching
that shit.
Curb
was great.
Stomp.
It was the best. But I told you, like we talked about on podcasts, you really can't be a third grader walking around curb stomping people. And when your champion is the face of the WWE, people mimic his moves. And I tell you, if I was a third grader last week, a little girl would have been bent down to tie her sneaker, and I would have curb stomped the hell out of her in the playground, and I would have got like
if you were a third grade. I just don't want to envision like 30-year-old Cal going around.
No, I'm not curb stomping little children.
I spent too much time on Reddit.
Yeah. No, that's the concern. So you can't have that happening. Yeah. So I understand the move change. I wish he wasn't just barring.
In fairness, I shouldn't have been 7 years old dropping Randy Macho Man Savage elbows off my couch either. So
it is what it is. Let's talk about.
Stone Cold stunning everybody.
I was suplexing people, so yeah. You know.
I mean, I torture racked
Razor
my
edge.
Friend.
Yeah.
And I figured out the figure four really hurt when I put it on somebody and I almost broke his leg.
Hurt your damn self with the
figure four.
One more
thing before we get out of here is how good was the Sasha Banks Becky Lynch match?
Yeah.
Like, how good, like, for that to be the co-main event, first of all,
yeah,
and for them to deliver the way that they did, because we were like, oh, this is Charlotte's division.
Right.
Sasha Banks?
You know, Sasha's bae. So I can't wait until she comes on the podcast. Like, she's felt my thirst on social media already. Instagram, Twitter, all
that's
the time.
Funny.
I hashtag bae her. She knows.
You know,
what up, Sasha?
I like Charlotte, but I was never sold on her. I think she gets... I don't want to say gets by because she's very talented. She relies on the family, yes, but her unique body... She's got a very athletic body. She's long and she's wide and she has got a good look. She's very athletic in terms of like a gymnast, but in terms of a worker, in terms of a sellable professional wrestler who I believe when they're in the ring, I don't think there's a better female on the roster than Becky Lynch. She works stiff. She works fast. She works in volume. When she takes a bump, she's back up on her feet, ready to work a Japanese arm drag. You know what I mean? She's not. When you watch the Bellas work a match, when you watch even AJ or Paige, to no necessarily fault of their own, they're just dainty. Like when they hit the ropes, they don't hit it with authority. Becky Lynch does everything with authority, and I'm really high on the girl. And credit also to Sasha because she's great as
Banks
well.
Banks is bae. I don't mean, like Sasha Banks is.
she is it. Oh, I can't wait till she's on a podcast. Yeah. I'm gonna have like the heart eye emojis like in real life. It's gonna be real.
I like Becky's debut too with Mad Max kind of. You said this, Andreas. Yeah. You're like, I don't know what it is. It just worked, and I was like, well, I mean, she had the post apocalyptic goggles and like the orange hair. She looked like she was kind of out of like a mutant comic book, like she was one of the X-Men in like some apocalypse world. And I don't think it was. I don't necessarily know it was. You know, Finn Balor's Jurassic Park walkout, Becky Lynch's Mad Max walk. I don't think it was necessarily planned, but it just works. And it's a good time for pro wrestling.
She's incredible. She can go. I mean, every time I see her suplex someone, it is legit. So
We're talking about Sasha or Becky?
No, we're talking about Becky.
Okay, yeah.
Becky, her suplexes are like...
And her dropkicks.
Grown men suplexes.
Did you see...
intense worker.
Yeah, did you see the bump she took, the face plant, when Sasha ripped her off the apron and she went face down under this...
Yes, I winced.
That's what I'm saying. I winced. No other women work like that. She is selling the fuck out. On a move-by-move basis, even if she's dishing it out, she could be the best female worker on that roster, man. And that's a real testament to her. And I watched her for the last couple months, and I don't want to say she flew under the radar, but I was just like, okay, the Irish girl, she was this little fighting Irish punk, and now she was this fighting Irish, like, typical gimmick that Vince would roll out, or just thoughtless, racist, not racist, but, I mean, short-sighted, stereotypical, we'll just say that. But now she's got this, like, metal edge or this punk edge and kind of harness more of herself. But the key is she's a worker. Kind of reminds me of the Ziggler of the females.
Oh,
but
God,
I don't want to.
Let's not do that.
Well, hey.
Let's not do that here.
We've seriously, you got something bad to say about Dolph Ziggler?
Have you not heard my Ziggler stance?
No, what's your Ziggler stance, Kel?
We're not doing it today.
We need way more time for my Ziggler stance.
Here's the good thing. I've heard you say Kendrick Lamar's album To Pimp a Butterfly wasn't that great, and I've heard you say that Sami Zayn shouldn't have been brought up in the top five roster moves at NXT to WWE.
They give him back the
mask. Well, yeah, all that stuff. But I've heard you say some crazy shit.
Yeah,
so.
Ziggler, I am not a Ziggler guy.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Edgar bashing at all.
Yeah, he bashed Frankie Edgar.
It was brutal.
It was like 12 minutes.
It was a Bayless-esque rant.
Yeah, dude, you got to hear this.
Do you want to be? You are, dude. You're worse. Like, dude, the shit you say. Like,
I'm not Screaming A. Smith, but you are Skip Bayless.
It is like, you say it in my jaw. Like, I can't, my brain doesn't compute it. You say stuff, and it's so... I don't want to say outside the norm, but it's just so wrong. Like, dude, Dolph Ziggler's like one of the best workers in the business. He makes everyone look better.
He's going to get buried.
Fine. That's totally different. But if you're saying, I mean, he makes everyone he wrestles with looks like a five-star guy.
I think he's fine. I think he's decent.
Just don't do it.
You know,
just don't do it. This is my co-host.
International.
This is my co-host.
But he can fight for the Intercontinental title and lose every 6 months.
I can't cry for him like Terrell Owens did with Tony. That's my quarterback. I can't do that.
I'm a little mad when it comes to Ziggler because I'm not all about Ziggler like you guys are, but I don't hate him like Kel does.
I'm not all about him necessarily, but...
And I don't hate him. I just think he's... Meh.
Kel hates him.
He's meh.
He's meh.
M-E-H-H-H-H.
Hates him. Hates him. Anyway.
We got to get out.
Yeah, we got to go talk to Conor McGregor. It's being the crazy people.
All right, so we're going to go see Conor McGregor right now work out, which is happening. We'll take pictures of that. Thank you, guys. Thank you, guys, for listening to a special episode of The Corner. Follow us on Twitter, The Corner LSN. My Twitter at Kel Dansby.
Mine at Andreas Hale.
Mine at Ryan McKinnell.
At Obey the Law, son. You got to love the puns, man.
All of us are basic and simple. So enjoy the special show.
Four basic bitches.
My name allows it, though. My name allows it.
Tune into everything else. Hit up the mailbag on Gmail. Check out episode 9, which is on SoundCloud or iTunes right now. Check us out during the fight for all our tweets and stuff. Until next week.
Peace.
I wish I could keep this feeling. I wish I could keep this feeling.